the way they moved almost in synchronization to stand across the road from us, the way they all had the same long, round muscles under the same red-brown skin, the same cropped black hair, and the way their expressions altered at exactly the same moment. They started out curious and cautious. When they saw me there, half hidden beside Jacob, they all became furious in the same second. Sam was still the biggest, though Jacob was getting close to catching up with him. Sam didn't really count as a boy. His face was older, not in the sense of lines or signs of aging, but in the maturity, the patience of his expression. "What have you done, Jacob?" he demanded. One of the others, one I didn't recognize, Jared or Paul, thrust past Sam and spoke before Jacob could defend himself. "Why can't you just follow the rules, Jacob?" he yelled, throwing his arms in the air. "What the hell are you thinking? Is she more important than everything? Than the whole tribe? Than the people getting killed?" "She can help," Jacob said quietly. "Help!" the angry boy shouted. His arms began to quiver. "Oh, that's likely. I'm sure the leech lover is just dying to help us out." "Don't talk about her like that," Jacob shouted back, stung by the boy's criticism. A shudder rippled through the other boy, along his shoulders and down his spine. "Paul, relax," Sam commanded. Paul shook his head back and forth, not in defiance, but as though he were trying to concentrate. "Geez, Paul," one of the other boys, probably Jared, muttered. "Get a grip." Paul twisted his head toward Jared, his lips curling back in irritation. Then he shifted his glare in my direction. Jacob took a step to put himself in front of me. That did it. "Right, protect her," Paul roared in outrage. Another shudder, a convulsion, heaved through his body. He threw his head back, a real growl tearing from between his teeth. "Paul!" Sam and Jacob shouted together. Paul seemed to fall forward, vibrating violently. Halfway to the ground, there was a loud ripping noise, and the boy exploded. Dark silver fur blew out from the boy, coalescing into a shape more than 5 times his size. A massive, crouched shape ready to spring. The wolf's muzzle wrinkled back over his teeth, and another growl rolled through his colossal chest. His dark, enraged eyes focused on me. In the same second, Jacob was running across the road straight for the monster. "Jacob!" I screamed. Mid-stride, a long tremor shivered down Jacob's spine. He leaped forward, diving headfirst into the empty air. With another sharp tearing sound, Jacob exploded too. He burst out of his skin. Shreds of black and white cloth blasted up into the air. It happened so quickly that if I'd blinked, I'd have missed the entire transformation. One second it was Jacob diving into the air, and then it was the gigantic russet brown wolf, so enormous that I couldn't make sense of its mass, somehow fitting inside Jacob, charging the crouched silver beast. Jacob met the other werewolf's attack head-on. Their angry snarls echoed like thunder off the trees. The black and white scraps, the remains of Jacob's clothes, fluttered to the ground where he disappeared. "Jacob!" I screamed again, staggering forward. "Stay where you are, Bella," Sam ordered. It was hard to hear him over the roar of the fighting wolves. They were snapping and tearing at each other, their sharp teeth flashing toward each other's throats. The Jacob wolf seemed to have the upper hand. He was visibly bigger than the other wolf, and it looked like he was stronger, too. He rammed his shoulder against the gray wolf again and again, knocking him back toward the trees. "Take her to Emily's," Sam shouted toward the other boys, who were watching the conflict with rapt expressions. Jacob had successfully shoved the gray wolf off the road, and they were disappearing into the forest, though the sound of their snarls was still loud. Sam ran after them, kicking off his shoes on the way. As he darted into the trees, he was quivering from head to toe. The growling and snapping was fading into the distance. Suddenly, the sound cut off, and it was very quiet on the road. One of the boys started laughing. I turned to stare at him. My wide eyes felt frozen, like I couldn't even blink them. The boy seemed to be laughing at my expression. "Well, there's something you don't see every day," he snickered. His face was vaguely familiar, thinner than the others. "Embry Call." "I do," the other boy Jared grumbled. "Every single day." "Aw, Paul doesn't lose his temper every day," Embry disagreed, still grinning. "Maybe 2 out of 3. Jared stopped to pick something white up off the ground. He held it up toward Embry. It dangled in limp strips from his hand. "Totally shredded," Jared said. "Billy said this was the last pair he could afford. Guess Jacob's going barefoot now." "This one survived," Embry said, holding up a white sneaker. "Jake can hop," he added with a laugh. Jared started collecting various pieces of fabric from the dirt. "Get Sam's shoes, will you? All the rest of this is headed for the trash." Embry grabbed the shoes and then jogged into the trees where Sam had disappeared. He was back in a few seconds with a pair of cut-off jeans draped over his arm. Jared gathered the torn remnants of Jacob's and Paul's clothes and wadded them into a ball. Suddenly, he seemed to remember me. He looked at me carefully, assessing. "Hey, you're not going to faint or puke or anything," he demanded. "I don't think so," I gasped. "You don't look so good. Maybe you should sit down." "Okay," I mumbled. For the second time in one morning, I put my head between my knees. "Jake should have warned us," Embry complained. "He shouldn't have brought his girlfriend into this. What did he expect?" "Well, the wolf's out of the bag now," Embry sighed. "Way to go, Jake." I raised my head to glare at the two boys who seemed to be taking this all so lightly. "Aren't you worried about them at all?" I demanded. Embry blinked once in surprise. "Worried? Why?" "They could hurt each other." Embry and Jared guffawed. "I hope Paul gets a mouthful of him," Jared said. "Teach him a lesson." I blanched. "Yeah, right," Embry disagreed. "Did you see Jake? Even Sam couldn't have phased on the fly like that. He saw Paul losing it, and it took him, what, half a second to attack. The boy's got a gift." "Paul's been fighting longer. I'll bet you $10 he leaves a mark." "You're on. Jake's a natural. Paul doesn't have a prayer." They shook hands, grinning. I tried to comfort myself with their lack of concern, but I couldn't drive the brutal image of the fighting werewolves from my head. My stomach churned, sore and empty. My head ached with worry. "Let's go see Emily. You know she'll have food waiting." Embry looked down at me. "Mind giving us a ride?" "No problem," I choked. Jared raised one eyebrow. "Maybe you better drive, Embry. She still looks like she might hurl." "Good idea. Where are the keys?" Embry asked me. "Ignition." Embry opened the passenger side door. "In you go," he said cheerfully, hauling me up from the ground with one hand and stuffing me into my seat. He appraised the available space. "You'll have to ride in the back," he told Jared. "That's fine. I got a weak stomach. I don't want to be in there when she blows." "I bet she's tougher than that. She runs with vampires." $5? Jared asked. "Done. I feel guilty taking your money like this." Embry got in and started the engine while Jared leapt agilely into the bed. As soon as his door was closed, Embry muttered to me, "Don't throw up, okay? I've only got a 10, and if Paul got his teeth into Jacob..." "Okay," I whispered. Embry drove us back toward the village. "Hey, how did Jake get around the injunction anyway?"
"The what?"
"The order, you know, to not spill the beans. How did he tell you about this?"
"Oh, that," I said, remembering Jacob trying to choke out the truth to me last night. "He didn't. I guessed right."
Embry pursed his lips, looking surprised.
"Suppose that would work. Where are we going? I asked. Emily's house. She's Sam's girlfriend. No, fiance now, I guess. They'll meet us back there after Sam gives it to them for what just happened. And after Paul and Jake scrounge up some new clothes, if Paul even has any left.
Does Emily know about...
Yeah, and hey, don't stare at her. That bugs Sam. I frowned at him.
Why would I stare?
Embry looked uncomfortable. Like you saw just now, hanging out around werewolves has its risks. He changed the subject quickly. Hey, are you okay about the whole thing with the black-haired bloodsucker in the meadow? It didn't look like he was a friend of yours, but...
Embry shrugged. No, he wasn't my friend.
That's good. We didn't want to start anything. Break the treaty, you know.
Oh, yeah. Jake told me about the treaty once, a long time ago. Why would killing Laurent break the treaty?
Laurent, he repeated, snorting like he was amused the vampire had had a name. Well, we were technically on Cullen turf. We're not allowed to attack any of them, the Cullens at least, off our land, unless they break the treaty first. We didn't know if the black-haired one was a relative of theirs or something. Looked like you knew him.
How would they go about breaking the treaty?
If they bite a human? Jake wasn't so keen on the idea of letting it go that far.
Oh. Thanks. I'm glad you didn't wait.
Our pleasure. He sounded like he meant that in a literal sense.
Embry drove past the easternmost house on the highway before turning off onto a narrow dirt road.
Your truck is slow, he noted.
Sorry. At the end of the lane was a tiny house that had once been gray. There was only one narrow window beside the weathered blue door, but the window box under it was filled with bright orange and yellow marigolds, giving the whole place a cheerful look.
Embry opened the truck door and inhaled. Mmm, Emily's cooking.
Jared jumped out of the back of the truck and headed for the door, but Embry stopped him with one hand on his chest. He looked at me meaningfully and cleared his throat.
I don't have my wallet on me, Jared said. That's okay, I won't forget.
They climbed up the one step and entered the house without knocking. I followed timidly after them. The front room, like Billy's house, was mostly kitchen. A young woman with satiny copper skin and long, straight, crow-black hair was standing at the counter by the sink, popping big muffins out of a tin and placing them on a paper plate. For one second, I thought that the reason Embry had told me not to stare was because the girl was so beautiful. And then she asked, "You guys hungry?" in a melodic voice, and she turned to face us full on, a smile on half of her face. The right side of her face was scarred from hairline to chin by three thick red lines, livid in color though they were long-healed. One line pulled down the corner of her dark, almond-shaped right eye. Another twisted the right side of her mouth into a permanent grimace. Thankful for Embry's warning, I quickly turned my eyes to the muffins in her hands. They smelled wonderful, like fresh blueberries.
Oh, Emily said, surprised. Who's this?
I looked up, trying to focus on the left half of her face.
Bella Swan, Jared told her, shrugging.
Apparently I'd been a topic of conversation before.
Who else?
Leave it to Jacob to find a way around, Emily murmured. She stared at me, and neither half of her once beautiful face was friendly.
So, you're the vampire girl.
I stiffened.
Yes. Are you the wolf girl?
She laughed, as did Embry and Jared. The left half of her face warmed.
I guess I am.
She turned to Jared. Where's Sam?
Bella, surprised Paul this morning.
Emily rolled her good eye.
Ah, Paul, she sighed. Do you think they'll be long?
I was just about to start the eggs.
Don't worry, Embry told her. If they're late, we won't let anything go to waste.
Emily chuckled and then opened the refrigerator.
No doubt, she agreed. Bella, are you hungry? Go ahead and help yourself to a muffin.
Thanks.
I took one from the plate and started nibbling around the edges. It was delicious, and it felt good in my tender stomach. Embry picked up his third and shoved it into his mouth whole. "Save some for your brothers," Emily chastised him, hitting him on the head with a wooden spoon. The word surprised me, but the others thought nothing of it. "Pig," Jared commented. I leaned against the counter and watched the three of them banter like a family. Emily's kitchen was a friendly place, bright with white cupboards and pale wooden floorboards. On the little round table, a cracked blue and white china pitcher was overflowing with wildflowers. Embry and Jared seemed entirely at ease here. Emily was mixing a humongous batch of eggs, several dozen in a big yellow bowl. She had the sleeves of her lavender shirt pushed up, and I could see that the scars extended all the way down her arm to the back of her right hand. Hanging out with werewolves truly did have its risks, just as Embry had said. The front door opened and Sam stepped through. "Emily," he said, and so much love saturated his voice that I felt embarrassed, intrusive, as I watched him cross the room in one stride and take her face in his wide hands. He leaned down and kissed the dark scars on her right cheek before he kissed her lips. "Hey, none of that," Jared complained. "I'm eating." "Then shut up and eat," Sam suggested, kissing Emily's ruined mouth again. "Ugh," Embry groaned. This was worse than any romantic movie. This was so real that it sang out loud with joy and life and true love. I put my muffin down and folded my arms across my empty chest. I stared at the flowers, trying to ignore the utter peace of their moment and the wretched throbbing of my wounds. I was grateful for the distraction when Jacob and Paul came through the door, and then shocked when I saw that they were laughing. While I watched, Paul punched Jacob on the shoulder, and Jacob went for a kidney jab in return. They laughed again. They both appeared to be in one piece. Jacob scanned the room, his eyes stopping when he found me leaning, awkward and out of place, against the counter in the far corner of the kitchen. "Hey, Bells," he greeted me cheerfully. He grabbed two muffins as he passed the table and came to stand beside me. "Sorry about before," he muttered under his breath. "How are you holding up?" "Don't worry, I'm okay. Good muffins." I picked mine back up and started nibbling again. My chest felt better as soon as Jacob was beside me. "Oh, man," Jared wailed, interrupting us. I looked up, and he and Embry were examining a fading pink line on Paul's forearm. Embry was grinning, exultant. $15, he crowed. "Did you do that?" I whispered to Jacob, remembering the bet. "I barely touched him. He'll be perfect by sundown." "By sundown?" I looked at the line on Paul's arm. Odd, but it looked weeks old. "Wolf thing," Jacob whispered. I nodded, trying to not look weirded out. "You okay?" I asked him under my breath. "Not a scratch on me." His expression was smug. "Hey, guys," Sam said in a loud voice, interrupting all the conversations going on in the small room. Emily was at the stove, scraping the egg mixture around a big skillet, but Sam still had one hand touching the small of her back, an unconscious gesture. "Jacob has information for us." Paul looked unsurprised. Jacob must have explained this to him and Sam already, or they'd just heard his thoughts. "I know what the redhead wants," Jacob directed his words toward Jared and Embry. "That's what I was trying to tell you before." He kicked the leg of the chair Paul had settled into. "And?" Jared asked. Jacob's face got serious. "She is trying to avenge her mate. Only it wasn't the black-haired leech we killed. The Cullens got her mate last year. And she's after Bella now." This wasn't news to me, but I still shivered. Jared, Embry, and Emily stared at me with open-mouthed surprise. "She's just a girl," Embry protested. "I didn't say it made sense, but that's why the bloodsucker's been trying to get past us. She's been heading for Forks." They continued to stare at me, mouth still hanging open for a long moment. I ducked my head. Excellent, Jared finally said, a smile beginning to pull up the corners of his mouth. We've got bait. With stunning speed, Jacob yanked a can opener from the counter and launched it at Jared's head. Jared's hand flicked up faster than I would have thought possible, and he snagged the tool just before it hit his face. Bella is not bait. You know what I mean, Jared said, unabashed. So we'll be changing our patterns, Sam said, ignoring their squabble. We'll try leaving a few holes and see if she falls for it. We'll have to split up, and I don't like that. But if she's really after Bella, she probably won't try to take advantage of our divided numbers. Quill's got to be close to joining us, Embry murmured. Then we'll be able to split evenly. Everyone looked down. I glanced at Jacob's face and it was hopeless, like it had been yesterday afternoon outside his house. No matter how comfortable they seemed to be with their fate, here in this happy kitchen, none of these werewolves wanted the same fate for their friend. Well, we won't count on that, Sam said in a low voice, and then continued at his regular volume. Paul, Jared, and Embry will take the outer perimeter, and Jacob and I will take the inner. We'll collapse in when we've got her trapped. I noticed that Emily didn't particularly like that Sam would be in the smaller grouping. Her worry had me glancing up at Jacob, worrying too. Sam caught my eye. Jacob thinks it would be best if you spend as much time as possible here in La Push. She won't know where to find you so easily, just in case. What about Charlie? I demanded. March Madness is still going, Jacob said. I think Billy and Harry can manage to keep Charlie down here when he's not at work. Wait, Sam said, holding one hand up. His glance flickered to Emily and then back to me. That's what Jacob thinks is best, but you need to decide for yourself. You should weigh the risks of both options very seriously. You saw this morning how easily things can get dangerous here, how quickly they get out of hand. If you choose to stay with us, I can't make any guarantees about your safety. I won't hurt her, Jacob mumbled, looking down. Sam acted as if he hadn't heard him speak. If there was somewhere else you felt safe. I bit my lip. Where could I go that wouldn't put someone else in danger? I recoiled again from the idea of bringing Renee into this, pulling her into the circle of the target I wore. I don't want to lead Victoria anywhere else, I whispered. Sam nodded. That's true. It's better to have her here, where we can end this. I flinched. I didn't want Jacob or any of the rest of them trying to end Victoria. I glanced at Jake's face. It was relaxed, almost the same as I remembered it from before the onset of the wolf thing, and utterly unconcerned by the idea of hunting vampires. You'll be careful, right? I asked, an audible lump in my throat. The boys burst into loud hoots of amusement. Everyone laughed at me, except Emily. She met my eyes, and I could suddenly see the symmetry underlying her deformity. Her face was still beautiful, and alive with a concern even more fierce than mine. I had to look away, before the love behind that concern could start me aching again. Food's ready, she announced then, and the strategic conversation was history. The guys hurried to surround the table, which looked tiny and in danger of being crushed by them, and devoured the buffet-sized pan of eggs Emily placed in their midst in record time. Emily ate leaning against the counter like me, avoiding the bedlam at the table, and watched them with affectionate eyes. Her expression clearly stated that this was her family. All in all, it wasn't exactly what I'd been expecting from a pack of werewolves. I spent the day in La Push, the majority of it in Billy's house. He left a message on Charlie's phone and at the station, and Charlie showed up around dinner time with two pizzas. It was good he brought two larges. Jacob ate one all by himself. I saw Charlie eyeing the two of us suspiciously all night, especially the much-changed Jacob. He asked about the hair. Jacob shrugged and told him it was just more convenient. I knew that as soon as Charlie and I were headed home, Jacob would take off. Off to run around as a wolf, as he had done intermittently through the entire day. He and his brothers of sorts kept up a constant watch, looking for some sign of Victoria's return. But since they chased her away from the hot springs last night, chased her halfway to Canada, according to Jacob, she'd yet to make another foray. I had no hope at all that she might just give up. I didn't have that kind of luck. Jacob walked me to my truck after dinner and lingered by the window, waiting for Charlie to drive away first. "Don't be afraid tonight," Jacob said, while Charlie pretended to be having trouble with his seatbelt. "We'll be out there, watching." "I won't worry about myself," I promised. "You're silly. Hunting vampires is fun. It's the best part of this whole mess." I shook my head. "If I'm silly, then you're dangerously unbalanced," he chuckled. "Get some rest, Bella, honey. You look exhausted." "I'll try." Charlie honked his horn impatiently. "See you tomorrow," Jacob said. "Come down first thing." "I will." Charlie followed me home. I paid scant attention to the lights in my rearview mirror. Instead, I wondered where Sam and Jared and Embry and Paul were, out running in the night. I wondered if Jacob had joined them yet. When we got home, I hurried for the stairs, but Charlie was right behind me. "What's going on, Bella?" he demanded before I could escape. "I thought Jacob was part of a gang and you two were fighting." "We made up."
"And the gang?"
"I don't know. Who can understand teenage boys? They're a mystery. But I met Sam Yulee and his fiancée, Emily. They seem pretty nice to me." I shrugged. "Must have all been a misunderstanding." His face changed.
"I hadn't heard that he and Emily had made it official. That's nice."
"Poor girl."
"Do you know what happened to her?"
"Mauled by a bear up north during salmon spawning season. Horrible accident. It was more than a year ago now. I heard Sam was really messed up over it."
"That's horrible," I echoed. "More than a year ago."
I'd bet that meant it had happened when there was just one werewolf in La Push. I shuddered at the thought of how Sam must have felt every time he looked at Emily's face. That night, I lay awake for a long time trying to sort through the day. I worked my way backward through dinner with Billy, Jacob, and Charlie, to the long afternoon in the Black's house, waiting anxiously to hear something from Jacob, to Emily's kitchen, to the horror of the werewolf fight, to talking with Jacob on the beach. I thought about what Jacob had said early this morning about hypocrisy. I thought about that for a long time. I didn't like to think that I was a hypocrite. Only what was the point of lying to myself? I curled into a tight ball. No, Edward wasn't a killer. Even in his darker past, he'd never been a murderer of innocence, at least. But what if he had been? What if, during the time that I'd known him, he had been just like any other vampire? What if people had been disappearing from the woods just like now? Would that have kept me away from him? I shook my head sadly. Love is irrational, I reminded myself. The more you love someone, the less sense anything made. I rolled over and tried to think of something else, and I thought of Jacob and his brothers out running in the darkness. I fell asleep imagining the wolves, invisible in the night, guarding me from danger. When I dreamed, I stood in the forest again, but I didn't wander. I was holding Emily's scarred hand as we faced into the shadows and waited anxiously for our werewolves to come home. Chapter 15. Pressure. It was spring break in Forks again. When I woke up on Monday morning, I lay in bed for a few seconds absorbing that. Last spring break, I'd been hunted by a vampire, too. I hope this wasn't some kind of tradition forming. Already I was falling into the pattern of things in La Push. I'd spent Sunday mostly on the beach, while Charlie hung out with Billy at the Black's house. I was supposed to be with Jacob, but Jacob had other things to do, so I wandered alone, keeping the secret from Charlie. When Jacob dropped in to check on me, He apologized for ditching me so much. He told me his schedule wasn't always this crazy, but until Victoria was stopped, the wolves were on red alert. When we walked along the beach now, he always held my hand. This made me brood over what Jared had said about Jacob involving his girlfriend. I suppose that that was exactly what it looked like from the outside. As long as Jake and I knew how it really was, I shouldn't let those kinds of assumptions bother me. And maybe they wouldn't if I hadn't known that Jacob would have loved for things to be what they appeared. But his hand felt nice as it warmed mine, and I didn't protest. I worked Tuesday afternoon. Jacob followed me on his bike to make sure I arrived safely, and Mike noticed. "Are you dating that kid from La Push, the sophomore?" he asked, poorly disguising the resentment in his tone. I shrugged. "Not in the technical sense of the word. I do spend most of my time with Jacob, though. He's my best friend." Mike's eyes narrowed shrewdly. "Don't kid yourself, Bella. The guy's head over heels for you." "I know," I sighed. "Life is complicated." "And girls are cruel," Mike said under his breath. I suppose that was an easy assumption to make, too. That night, Sam and Emily joined Charlie and me for dessert at Billy's house. Emily brought a cake that would have won over a harder man than Charlie. I could see as the conversation flowed naturally through a range of casual subjects that any worries Charlie might have harbored about gangs in La Push were being dissolved. Jake and I skipped out early to get some privacy. We went out to his garage and sat in the rabbit. Jacob leaned his head back, his face drawn with exhaustion. "You need some sleep, Jake." "I'll get around to it." He reached over and took my hand. His skin was blazing on mine. "Is that one of those wolf things?" I asked him. "The heat, I mean?" "Yeah, we run a little warmer than the normal people. About 108, 109. I never get cold anymore. I could stand like this," he gestured to his bare torso, "in a snowstorm, and it wouldn't bother me. The flakes would turn to rain where I stood." "And you all heal fast. That's a wolf thing, too?" "Yeah. Wanna see? It's pretty cool." His eyes flipped open and he grinned. He reached around me to the glove compartment and dug around for a minute. His hand came out with a pocket knife. "No, I do not want to see," I shouted as soon as I realized what he was thinking. "Put that away." Jacob chuckled but shoved the knife back where it belonged. "Fine. It's a good thing we heal, though. You can't go see just any doctor when you're running a temperature that should mean you're dead." "No, I guess not." I thought about that for a minute. "And being so big, that's part of it? Is that why you're all worried about Quill?" "That and the fact that Quill's grandfather says the kid could fry an egg on his forehead." Jacob's face turned hopeless. "It won't be long now. There's no exact age. It just builds and builds, and then suddenly..." He broke off, and it was a moment before he could speak again. "Sometimes, if you get really upset or something, that can trigger it early. But I wasn't upset about anything. I was happy," he laughed bitterly. "Because of you, mostly. That's why it didn't happen to me sooner. Instead, it just kept on building up inside me. I was like a time bomb. You know what set me off? I got back from that movie, and Billy said I looked weird. That was all. But I just snapped. And then I exploded. I almost ripped his face off. My own father." He shuddered, and his face paled. "Is it really bad, Jake?" I asked anxiously, wishing I had some way to help him. "Are you miserable?" "No, I'm not miserable," he told me. "Not anymore. Not now that you know. That was hard before." He leaned over so that his cheek was resting on top of my head. He was quiet for a moment, and I wondered what he was thinking about. Maybe I didn't want to know. "What's the hardest part?" I whispered, still wishing I could help. "The hardest part is feeling out of control," he said slowly. feeling like I can't be sure of myself. Like maybe you shouldn't be around me. Like maybe nobody should. Like I'm a monster who might hurt somebody. You've seen Emily. Sam lost control of his temper for just 1 second, and she was standing too close. And now there's nothing he can ever do to put it right again. I hear his thoughts. I know what that feels like. Who wants to be a nightmare? A monster? And then, the way it comes so easily to me, the way I'm better at it than the rest of them, does that make me even less human than Emery or Sam? Sometimes I'm afraid that I'm losing myself. Is it hard to find yourself again? At first, he said. It takes some practice to phase back and forth, but it's easier for me. Why? I wondered. Because Ephraim Black was my father's grandfather, and Quill Atira was my mother's grandfather. Quill? I asked in confusion. His great-grandfather, Jacob clarified. The Quill you know is my second cousin. But why does it matter who your great-grandfathers are? Because Ephraim and Quill were in the last pack. Levi Yuli was the third. It's in my blood on both sides. I never had a chance. Like Quill doesn't have a chance. His expression was bleak. What's the very best part? I asked, hoping to cheer him up. The best part, he said, suddenly smiling again, is the speed.
Better than the motorcycles?
He nodded, enthusiastic. There's no comparison. How fast can you run? He finished my question. Fast enough. What can I measure it by? We caught, what was his name? Laurent? I imagine that means more to you than it would to someone else. It did mean something to me. I couldn't imagine that. The wolves running faster than a vampire. When the Cullens ran, they all but turned invisible with speed. So tell me something I don't know, he said. Something about vampires. How did you stand it, being around them? Didn't it creep you out? No, I said curtly. My tone made him thoughtful for a moment. Say, why'd your bloodsucker kill that James anyway? He asked suddenly. James was trying to kill me. It was like a game for him. He lost. Do you remember last spring when I was in the hospital down in Phoenix? Jacob sucked in a breath. He got that close? He got very, very close. I stroked my scar. Jacob noticed because he held the hand I moved. What's that? He traded hands, examining my right. This is your funny scar, the cold one. He looked at it closer with new eyes and gasped. Yes. It's what you think it is, I said. James bit me. His eyes bulged and his face turned a strange sallow color under the russet surface. He looked like he was about to be sick. But if he bit you, shouldn't you be... He choked. Edward saved me twice, I whispered. He sucked the venom out. You know, like with a rattlesnake. I twitched as the pain lashed around the edges of the hole. But I wasn't the only one twitching. I could feel Jacob's whole body trembling next to mine. Even the car shook. Careful, Jake. Easy. Calm down. Yeah, he panted. Calm. He shook his head back and forth quickly. After a moment, only his hands were shaking. You okay? Yeah, almost. Tell me something else. Give me something else to think about. What do you want to know? I don't know. He had his eyes closed, concentrating. The extra stuff, I guess. Did any of the other Cullens have extra talents? Like the mind reading? I hesitated a second. This felt like a question he would ask of his spy, not his friend. But what was the point of hiding what I knew? It didn't matter now, and it would help him control himself. So I spoke quickly, the image of Emily's ruined face in my mind, and the hair rising on my arms. I couldn't imagine how the russet wolf would fit inside the rabbit. Jacob would tear the whole garage apart if he changed now. Jasper could sort of control the emotions of the people around him. Not in a bad way, just to calm someone down, that kind of thing. It would probably help Paul a lot, I added, teasing weakly. And then Alice could see things that were going to happen. The future, you know, but not absolutely. The things she saw would change when someone changed the path they were on. Like how she'd see me dying, and she'd see me becoming one of them. Two things that had not happened, and one that never would. My head started to spin. I couldn't seem to pull in enough oxygen from the air. No lungs. Jacob was entirely in control now, very still beside me. "Why do you do that?" he asked. He tugged lightly at one of my arms, which was bound around my chest, and then gave up when it wouldn't come loose easily. I hadn't even realized I'd moved them. "You do that when you're upset. Why?" "It hurts to think about them," I whispered. "It's like I can't breathe, like I'm breaking into pieces." It was bizarre how much I could tell Jacob now. We had no more secrets. He smoothed my hair. "It's okay, Bella. It's okay. I won't bring it up again. I'm sorry." "I'm fine," I gasped. "Happens all the time. Not your fault." "We're a pretty messed up pair, aren't we?" Jacob said. "Neither one of us can hold our shape together right." "Pathetic," I agreed, still breathless. "At least we have each other," he said, clearly comforted by the thought. I was comforted too. "At least there's that," I agreed. And when we were together, it was fine. But Jacob had a horrible, dangerous job he felt compelled to do. And so I was often alone, stuck in La Push for safety, with nothing to do to keep my mind off any of my worries. I felt awkward, always taking up space at Billy's. I did some studying for another calculus test that was coming up next week, but I could only look at math for so long. When I didn't have something obvious to do in my hands, I felt like I ought to be making conversation with Billy, the pressure of normal societal rules. But Billy wasn't one for filling up the long silences, and so the awkwardness continued. I tried hanging out at Emily's place Wednesday afternoon for a change. At first it was kind of nice. Emily was a cheerful person who never sat still. I drifted behind her while she flitted around her little house and yard, scrubbing at the spotless floor, pulling a tiny weed, fixing a broken hinge, tugging a string of wool through an ancient loom, and always cooking, too. She complained lightly about the increase in the boys' appetites from all their extra running, but it was easy to see she didn't mind taking care of them. It wasn't hard to be with her. After all, we were both wolf girls now. But Sam checked in after I'd been there for a few hours. I only stayed long enough to ascertain that Jacob was fine and there was no news, and then I had to escape. The aura of love and contentment that surrounded them was harder to take in concentrated doses, with no one else around to dilute it. So that left me wandering the beach, pacing the length of the rocky crescent back and forth, again and again. Alone time wasn't good for me. Thanks to the new honesty with Jacob, I'd been talking and thinking about the Cullens way too much. No matter how I tried to distract myself, and I had plenty to think of, I was honestly and desperately worried about Jacob and his wolf brothers. I was terrified for Charlie and the others who thought they were hunting animals. I was getting in deeper and deeper with Jacob, without ever having consciously decided to progress in that direction. And I didn't know what to do about it. None of these very real, very deserving of thought, very pressing concerns could take my mind off the pain in my chest for long. Eventually, I couldn't even walk anymore, because I couldn't breathe. I sat down on a patch of semi-dry rocks and curled up in a ball. Jacob found me like that, and I could tell from his expression that he understood. "Sorry," he said right away. He pulled me up from the ground and wrapped both arms around my shoulders. I hadn't realized that I was cold until then. His warmth made me shudder, but at least I could breathe with him there. "I'm ruining your spring break," Jacob accused himself as we walked back up the beach. No, you're not. I didn't have any plans. I don't think I like spring breaks anyway. I'll take tomorrow morning off. The others can run without me. We'll do something fun. The word seemed out of place in my life right now. Barely comprehensible. Bizarre. Fun? Fun is exactly what you need. He gazed out across the heaving gray waves, deliberating. As his eyes scanned the horizon, he had a flash of inspiration. Got it, he crowed. Another promise to keep. What are you talking about? He let go of my hand and pointed toward the southern edge of the beach, where the flat, rocky half-moon dead-ended against the sheer sea cliffs. I stared, uncomprehending. Didn't I promise to take you cliff diving? I shivered. Yeah, it'll be pretty cold. Not as cold as it is today. Can you feel the weather changing? The pressure? It'll be warmer tomorrow. You up for it? The dark water did not look inviting, and from this angle, the cliffs looked even higher than before. But it had been days since I'd heard Edward's voice. That was probably part of the problem. I was addicted to the sound of my delusions. It made things worse if I went too long without them. Jumping off a cliff was certain to remedy that situation. Sure, I'm up for it. Fun. It's a date, he said, and draped his arm around my shoulders. Okay, now let's go get you some sleep. I didn't like the way the circles under his eyes were beginning to look permanently etched onto his skin. I woke early the next morning and snuck a change of clothes out to the truck. I had a feeling that Charlie would approve of today's plan just about as much as he would approve of the motorcycle. The idea of a distraction from all my worries had me almost excited. Maybe it would be fun. A date with Jacob, a date with Edward, I laughed darkly to myself. Jake could say what he wanted about us being a messed up pair. I was the one who was truly messed up. I made the werewolf seem downright normal. I expected Jacob to meet me out front the way he usually did when my noisy truck announced my arrival. When he didn't, I guessed that he might still be sleeping. I would wait, let him get as much rest as he could. He needed his sleep, and that would give the day time to warm a bit more. Jake had been right about the weather, though. It had changed in the night. A thick layer of clouds pressed heavily on the atmosphere now, making it almost sultry. It was warm and close under the gray blanket. I left my sweater in the truck. I knocked quietly on the door. Come on in, Bella, Billy said. He was at the kitchen table eating cold cereal. Jake sleeping? No. He set a spoon down, and his eyebrows pulled together. What happened? I demanded. I could tell from his expression that something had. Embry, Jared, and Paul crossed a fresh trail early this morning. Sam and Jake took off to help. Sam was hopeful. She's hedged herself in beside the mountains. He thinks they have a good chance to finish this. Oh no, Billy, I whispered. Oh no. He chuckled deep and low. Do you really like La Push so well that you want to extend your sentence here? Don't make jokes, Billy. This is too scary for that. You're right, he agreed, still complacent. His ancient eyes were impossible to read. This one's tricky. I bit my lip. It's not as dangerous for them as you think it is. Sam knows what he's doing. You're the one that you should worry about. The vampire doesn't want to fight them. She's just trying to find a way around them, to you. How does Sam know what he's doing? I demanded, brushing aside his concern for me. They've only killed just the one vampire. That could have been luck. We take what we do very seriously, Bella. Nothing's been forgotten. Everything they need to know has been passed down from father to son for generations. That didn't comfort me the way he probably intended it to. The memory of Victoria, wild, cat-like, lethal, was too strong in my head. If she couldn't get around the wolves, she would eventually try to go through them. Billy went back to his breakfast, I sat down on the sofa and flipped aimlessly through the TV channels. That didn't last long. I started to feel closed in by the small room, claustrophobic, upset by the fact that I couldn't see out the curtained windows. "I'll be at the beach," I told Billy abruptly and hurried out the door. Being outside didn't help as much as I'd hoped. The clouds pushed down with an invisible weight that kept the claustrophobia from easing. The forest seemed strangely vacant as I walked toward the beach. I didn't see any animals. No birds, no squirrels. I couldn't hear any birds either. The silence was eerie. There wasn't even the sound of wind in the trees. I knew it was all just a product of the weather, but it still made me edgy. The heavy, warm pressure of the atmosphere was perceptible even to my weak human senses, and it hinted at something major in the storm department. A glance at the sky backed this up. The clouds were churning sluggishly despite the lack of breeze on the ground. The closest clouds were a smoky gray, but between the cracks I could see another layer that was a gruesome purple color. The skies had a ferocious plan in store for today. The animals must be bunkering down. As soon as I reached the beach, I wished I hadn't come. I'd already had enough of this place. I'd been here almost every day, wandering alone. Was it so much different from my nightmares? But where else to go? I trudged down to the driftwood tree and sat at the end so that I could lean against the tangled roots. I stared up at the angry sky broodingly, waiting for the first drops to break the stillness. I tried not to think about the danger Jacob and his friends were in, because nothing could happen to Jacob. The thought was unendurable. I'd lost too much already. Would fate take the last few shreds of peace left behind? That seemed unfair, out of balance. But maybe I'd violated some unknown rule, crossed some line that had condemned me. Maybe it was wrong to be so involved with myths and legends, to turn my back on the human world. Maybe, no, nothing would happen to Jacob. I had to believe that or I wouldn't be able to function. Arrgh, I groaned and jumped off the log. I couldn't sit still. It was worse than pacing. I'd really been counting on hearing Edward this morning. It seemed like that was the one thing that might make it bearable to live through this day. The hole had been festering lately, like it was getting revenge for the times that Jacob's presence had tamed it. The edges burned. The waves picked up as I paced, beginning to crash against the rocks, but there was still no wind. I felt pinned down by the pressure of the storm. Everything swirled around me, but it was perfectly still where I stood. The air had a faint electric charge. I could feel the static in my hair. Farther out, the waves were angrier than they were along the shore. I could see them battering against the line of the cliffs, spraying big white clouds of sea foam into the sky. There was still no movement in the air, though the clouds roiled more quickly now. It was eerie looking, like the clouds were moving by their own will. I shivered, though I knew it was just a trick of the pressure. The cliffs were a black knife edge against the livid sky. Staring at them, I remembered the day Jacob had told me about Sam and his gang. I thought of the boys, the werewolves, throwing themselves into the empty air. The image of the falling, spiraling figures was still vivid in my mind. I imagined the utter freedom of the fall. I imagined the way Edward's voice would have sounded in my head, furious, velvet, perfect. The burning in my chest flared agonizingly. There had to be some way to quench it. The pain was growing more and more intolerable by the second. I glared at the cliffs and the crashing waves. Well, why not? Why not quench it right now? Jacob had promised me cliff diving, hadn't he? Just because he was unavailable, should I have to give up the distraction I needed so badly? Needed even worse because Jacob was out risking his life? Risking it, in essence, for me. If it weren't for me, Victoria would not be killing people here. Just somewhere else, far away. If anything happened to Jacob, it would be my fault. That realization stabbed deep, and had me jogging back up to the road toward Billy's house, where my truck waited. I knew my way to the lane that passed closest to the cliffs, but I had to hunt for the little path that would take me out to the ledge. As I followed it, I looked for turns or forks, knowing that Jake had planned to take me off the lower outcropping rather than the top. But the path wound in a thin single line toward the brink with no options. I didn't have time to find another way down. The storm was moving in quickly now. The wind was finally beginning to touch me, the clouds pressing closer to the ground. Just as I reached the place where the dirt path fanned out into the stone precipice, the first drops broke through and splattered on my face. It was not hard to convince myself that I didn't have time to search for another way. I wanted to jump from the top. This was the image that had lingered in my head. I wanted the long fall that would feel like flying. I knew that this was the stupidest, most reckless thing I had done yet. The thought made me smile. The pain was already easing, as if my body knew that Edward's voice was just seconds away. The ocean sounded very far away, somehow farther than before, when I was on the path in the trees. I grimaced when I thought of the probable temperature of the water, but I wasn't going to let that stop me. The wind blew stronger now, whipping the rain into eddies around me. I stepped out to the edge, keeping my eyes on the empty space in front of me. My toes felt ahead blindly, caressing the edge of the rock when they encountered it. I drew in a deep breath and held it, waiting. Bella? I smiled and exhaled. Yes? I didn't answer out loud, for fear that the sound of my voice would shatter the beautiful illusion. He sounded so real, so close. It was only when he was disapproving like this that I could hear the true memory of his voice, the velvet texture and the musical intonation that made up the most perfect of all voices. Don't do this, he pleaded. You wanted me to be human, I reminded him. Well, watch me. Please, for me. But you won't stay with me any other way. Please. It was just a whisper in the blowing rain that tossed my hair and drenched my clothes, making me as wet as if this were my second jump of the day. I rolled up onto the balls of my feet. No, Bella! He was angry now, and the anger was so lovely. I smiled and raised my arms straight out, as if I were going to dive, lifting my face into the rain. But it was too ingrained from years of swimming at the public pool, feet first, first time. I leaned forward, crouching to get more spring. And I flung myself off the cliff. I screamed as I dropped through the open air like a meteor, but it was a scream of exhilaration and not fear. The wind resisted, trying vainly to fight the unconquerable gravity, pushing against me and twirling me in spirals like a rocket crashing to the earth. Yes! The word echoed through my head as I sliced through the surface of the water. It was icy, colder than I'd feared, and yet the chill only added to the high. I was proud of myself as I plunged deeper into the freezing black water. I hadn't had one moment of terror, just pure adrenaline. Really, the fall wasn't scary at all. Where was the challenge? That was when the current caught me. I'd been so preoccupied by the size of the cliffs, by the obvious danger of their high, sheer faces, that I hadn't worried at all about the dark water waiting. I never dreamed that the true menace was lurking far below me, under the heaving surf. It felt like the waves were fighting over me, jerking me back and forth between them, as if determined to share by pulling me into halves. I knew the right way to avoid a riptide, swim parallel to the beach rather than struggling for the shore. But the knowledge did me little good when I didn't know which way the shore was. I couldn't even tell which way the surface was. The angry water was black in every direction. There was no brightness to direct me upward. Gravity was all-powerful when it competed with the air, but it had nothing on the waves. I couldn't feel a downward pull, a sinking in any direction. just the battering of the current that flung me round and round like a rag doll. I fought to keep my breath in, to keep my lips locked around my last store of oxygen. It didn't surprise me that my delusion of Edward was there. He owed me that much, considering that I was dying. I was surprised by how sure that knowledge was. I was going to drown. I was drowning. "Keep swimming," Edward begged urgently in my head. Where? There was nothing but the darkness. There was no place to swim to. "Stop that," he ordered. "Don't you dare give up." The cold of the water was numbing my arms and legs. I didn't feel the buffeting so much as before. It was more of just a dizziness now, a helpless spinning in the water. But I listened to him. I forced my arms to continue reaching, my legs to kick harder, though every second I was facing a new direction. It couldn't be doing any good. What was the point? "Fight," he yelled. "Damn it, Bella, keep fighting." Why? I didn't want to fight anymore. And it wasn't the lightheadedness or the cold or the failure of my arms as the muscles gave out in exhaustion that made me content to stay where I was. I was almost happy that it was over. This was an easier death than others I'd faced. Oddly peaceful. I thought briefly of the cliches, about how you were supposed to see your life flash before your eyes. I was so much luckier. Who wanted to see a rerun anyway? I saw him, and I had no will to fight. It was so clear, so much more defined than any memory. My subconscious had stored Edward away in flawless detail, saving him for this final moment. I could see his perfect face as if he were really there. The exact shade of his icy skin, the shape of his lips, the line of his jaw, the gold glinting in his furious eyes. He was angry, naturally, that I was giving up. His teeth were clenched and his nostrils flared with rage. "No, Bella, no!" My ears were flooded with the freezing water, but his voice was clearer than ever. I ignored his words and concentrated on the sound of his voice. Why would I fight when I was so happy where I was? Even as my lungs burned for more air and my legs cramped in the icy cold, I was content. I'd forgotten what real happiness felt like. Happiness. It made the whole dying thing pretty bearable. The current won at that moment, shoving me abruptly against something hard, a rock invisible in the gloom. It hit me solidly across the chest, slamming into me like an iron bar, and the breath whooshed out of my lungs, escaping in a thick cloud of silver bubbles. Water flooded down my throat, choking and burning. The iron bar seemed to be dragging me, pulling me away from Edward, deeper into the dark, to the ocean floor. "Goodbye, I love you," was my last thought. Chapter 16, Paris. At that moment, my head broke the surface. How disorienting. I'd been sure I was sinking. The current wouldn't let up. It was slamming me against more rocks. They beat against the center of my back sharply, rhythmically, pushing the water from my lungs. It gushed out in amazing volume, absolute torrents pouring from my mouth and nose. The salt burned and my lungs burned, and my throat was too full of water to catch a breath, and the rocks were hurting my back. Somehow I stayed in one place, though the waves still heaved around me. I couldn't see anything but water everywhere, reaching for my face. "Breathe," a voice, wild with anxiety, ordered, and I felt a cruel stab of pain when I recognized the voice, because it wasn't Edward's. I could not obey. The waterfall pouring from my mouth didn't stop long enough for me to catch a breath. The black, icy water filled my chest, burning. The rock smacked into my back again, right between my shoulder blades, and another volley of water choked its way out of my lungs. "Breathe, Bella! Come on!" Jacob begged. Black spots bloomed across my vision, getting wider and wider, blocking out the light. The rock struck me again. The rock wasn't cold like the water. It was hot on my skin. I realized it was Jacob's hand, trying to beat the water from my lungs. The iron bar that had dragged me from the sea was also warm. My head whirled. The black spots covered everything. Was I dying again then? I didn't like it. This wasn't as good as the last time. It was only dark now. Nothing worth looking at here. The sound of the crashing waves faded into the black and became a quiet, even whoosh that sounded like it was coming from the inside of my ears.
Bella?
Jacob asked, his voice still tense, but not as wild as before.
Bells? Honey, can you hear me?
The contents of my head swished and rolled sickeningly, like they joined the rough water.
How long has she been unconscious? Someone else asked.
The voice that was not Jacob shocked me, jarred me into a more focused awareness. I realized that I was still. There was no tug of the current on me. The heaving was inside my head. The surface under me was flat and motionless. It felt grainy against my bare arms.
I don't know, Jacob reported, still frantic.
His voice was very close. Hands, so warm they had to be his, brushed wet hair from my cheeks.
A few minutes? It didn't take long to tow her to the beach.
The quiet whooshing inside my ears was not the waves. It was the air moving in and out of my lungs again. Each breath burned. The passageways were as raw as if I'd scrubbed them out with steel wool. But I was breathing, and I was freezing. A thousand sharp, icy beads were striking my face and arms, making the cold worse.
She's breathing. She'll come around.
We should get her out of the cold, though. I don't like the color she's turning. I recognize Sam's voice this time.
You think it's okay to move her?
She didn't hurt her back or anything when she fell?
I don't know.
They hesitated. I tried to open my eyes. It took me a minute. But then I could see the dark purple clouds flinging the freezing rain down at me.
Jake,
I croaked. Jacob's face blocked out the sky.
Oh,
he gasped, relief washing over his features. His eyes were wet from the rain.
Oh, Bella, are you okay? Can you hear me? Do you hurt anywhere?
Just my throat, I stuttered, my lips quivering from the cold.
Let's get you out of here then,
Jacob said. He slid his arms under me and lifted me without effort, like picking up an empty box. His chest was bare and warm. He hunched his shoulders to keep the rain off of me. My head lolled over his arm. I stared vacantly back toward the furious water, beating the sand behind him.
You got her?
I heard Sam ask.
Yeah, I'll take it from here. Get back to the hospital. I'll join you later. Thanks, Sam.
My head was still rolling. None of his words sunk in at first. Sam didn't answer. There was no sound, and I wondered if he were already gone. The water licked and writhed up the sand after us as Jacob carried me away, like it was angry that I'd escaped. As I stared wearily, a spark of color caught my unfocused eyes. A small flash of fire was dancing on the black water, far out in the bay. The image made no sense, and I wondered how conscious I really was. My head swirled with the memory of the black, churning water, of being so lost that I couldn't find up or down. So lost. But somehow, Jacob,
how did you find me?
I rasped.
I was searching for you, he told me.
He was half jogging through the rain, up the beach toward the road.
I followed the tire tracks to your truck, and I heard you scream.
He shuddered.
Why would you jump, Bella? Didn't you notice that it's turning into a hurricane out here? Couldn't you have waited for me?
Anger filled his tone as the relief faded.
Sorry, I muttered. It was stupid.
Yeah, it was really stupid, he agreed, drops of rain shaking free of his hair as he nodded.
Look. Do you mind saving the stupid stuff for when I'm around?
I won't be able to concentrate if I think you're jumping off cliffs behind my back.
Sure, I agreed. No problem.
I sounded like a chain smoker. I tried to clear my throat and then winced. The throat clearing felt like stabbing a knife down there.
What happened today? Did you find her?
It was my turn to shudder, though I wasn't so cold here, right next to his ridiculous body heat. Jacob shook his head. He was still more running than walking as he headed up the road to his house.
No. She took off into the water. The bloodsuckers have the advantage there. That's why I raced home. I was afraid she was going to double back swimming. You spend so much time on the beach.
He trailed off, a catch in his throat.
Sam came back with you? Is everyone else home too?
I hope they weren't still out searching for her.
Yeah, sort of.
I tried to read his expression, squinting into the hammering rain. His eyes were tight with worry or pain. The words that hadn't made sense before suddenly did.
You said hospital before to Sam. Is someone hurt? Did she fight you?
My voice jumped up an octave, sounding strange with the hoarseness.
No, no. When we got back, Em was waiting with the news. It's Harry Clearwater. Harry had a heart attack this morning.
Harry? I shook my head, trying to absorb what he was saying.
Oh, no. Does Charlie know?
Yeah, he's over there, too, with my dad.
Is Harry going to be okay?
Jacob's eyes tightened again. It doesn't look so great right now. Abruptly, I felt really sick with guilt. Felt truly horrible about the brainless cliff dive. Nobody needed to be worrying about me right now. What a stupid time to be reckless.
What can I do? I asked.
At that moment, the rain stopped. I hadn't realized we were already back to Jacob's house until he walked through the door. The storm pounded against the roof.
You can stay here, Jacob said as he dumped me on the short couch. I mean it. Right here. I'll get you some dry clothes.
I let my eyes adjust to the dark room while Jacob banged around in his bedroom. The cramped front room seemed so empty without Billy. Almost desolate. It was strangely ominous. Probably just because I knew where he was. Jacob was back in seconds. He threw a pile of gray cotton at me.
These will be huge on you, but it's the best I've got.
I'll step outside so you can change.
Don't go anywhere. I'm too tired to move yet. Just stay with me.
Jacob sat on the floor next to me, his back against the couch. I wondered when he'd slept last. He looked as exhausted as I felt. He leaned his head on the cushion next to mine and yawned.
Guess I could rest for a minute.
His eyes closed. I let mine slide shut, too. Poor Harry. Poor Sue. I knew Charlie was going to be beside himself. Harry was one of his best friends. Despite Jake's negative take on things, I hoped fervently that Harry would pull through. For Charlie's sake. For Sue's and Leah's and Seth's. Billy's sofa was right next to the radiator, and I was warm now, despite my soaked clothes. My lungs ached in a way that pushed me toward unconsciousness rather than keeping me awake. I wondered vaguely if it was wrong to sleep, or was I getting drowning mixed up with concussions? Jacob began softly snoring, and the sound of it soothed like a lullaby. I fell asleep quickly. For the first time in a very long time, my dream was just a normal dream, just a blurred wandering through old memories. Blinding bright visions of the Phoenix sun, my mother's face, a ramshackle treehouse, a faded quilt, a wall of mirrors, a flame on the black water. I forgot each of them as soon as the picture changed. The last picture was the only one that stuck in my head. It was meaningless, just a set on a stage, a balcony at night, a painted moon hanging in the sky. I watched the girl in her nightdress lean on the railing and talk to herself.
meaningless. But when I slowly struggled back to consciousness, Juliet was on my mind. Jacob was still asleep. He'd slumped down to the floor and his breathing was deep and even. The house was darker now than before. It was black outside the window. I was stiff, but warm and almost dry. The inside of my throat burned with every breath I took. I was going to have to get up, at least to get a drink. But my body just wanted to lie here limp, to never move again. Instead of moving, I thought about Juliet some more. I wondered what she would have done if Romeo had left her, not because he was banished, but because he lost interest. What if Rosaline had given him the time of day, and he changed his mind? What if, instead of marrying Juliet, he'd just disappeared? I thought I knew how Juliet would feel. She wouldn't go back to her old life, not really. She wouldn't ever have moved on, I was sure of that. Even if she'd lived until she was old and gray, every time she closed her eyes, it would have been Romeo's face she saw behind her lids. She would have accepted that eventually. I wondered if she would have married Paris in the end, just to please her parents, to keep the peace. No, probably not, I decided. But then, the story didn't say much about Paris. He was just a stick figure, a placeholder, a threat, a deadline to force her hand. What if there were more to Paris? What if Paris had been Juliet's friend, her very best friend? What if he was the only one she could confide in about the whole devastating thing with Romeo? The one person who really understood her and made her feel halfway human again. What if he was patient and kind? What if he took care of her? What if Juliet knew she couldn't survive without him? What if he really loved her and wanted her to be happy? And what if she loved Paris? Not like Romeo. Nothing like that, of course. But enough that she wanted him to be happy, too. Jacob's slow, deep breathing was the only sound in the room. Like a lullaby hummed to a child. Like the whisper of a rocking chair. Like the ticking of an old clock when you had nowhere you needed to go. It was the sound of comfort. If Romeo was really gone, never coming back, would it have mattered whether or not Juliet had taken Paris up on his offer? Maybe she should have tried to settle into the leftover scraps of life that were left behind. Maybe that would have been as close to happiness as she could get. I sighed, and then groaned when the sigh scraped my throat. I was reading too much into the story. Romeo wouldn't change his mind. That's why people still remembered his name, always twined with hers, Romeo and Juliet. That's why it was a good story. Juliet gets dumped and ends up with Paris would have never been a hit. I closed my eyes and drifted again, letting my mind wander away from the stupid play I didn't want to think about anymore. I thought about reality instead, about jumping off the cliff, and what a brainless mistake that had been. And not just the cliff, but the motorcycles, and the whole irresponsible evil Knievel bit. What if something bad happened to me? What would that do to Charlie? Harry's heart attack had pushed everything suddenly into perspective for me. Perspective that I didn't want to see. Because if I admitted to the truth of it, it would mean that I would have to change my ways. Could I live like that? Maybe. It wouldn't be easy. In fact, it would be downright miserable to give up my hallucinations and try to be a grown-up. But maybe I should do it. And maybe I could, if I had Jacob. I couldn't make that decision right now. It hurt too much. I'd think about something else. Images from my ill-considered afternoon stunt rolled through my head while I tried to come up with something pleasant to think about. The feel of the air as I fell, the blackness of the water, the thrashing of the current, Edward's face. I lingered there for a long time. Jacob's warm hands trying to beat life back into me, the stinging rain flung down by the purple clouds, the strange fire on the waves.
There was something familiar about that flash of color on top of the water. Of course, it couldn't really be fire. My thoughts were interrupted by the sound of a car squelching through the mud on the road outside. I heard it stop in front of the house, and doors started opening and closing. I thought about sitting up, and then decided against that idea. Billy's voice was easily identifiable, but he kept it uncharacteristically low, so that it was only a gravelly grumble. The door opened, and the light flicked on. I blinked, momentarily blind. Jake startled awake, gasping and jumping to his feet.
"Sorry," Billy grunted. "Did we wake you?"
My eyes slowly focused on his face, and then as I could read his expression, they filled with tears. "Oh no, Billy," I moaned. He nodded slowly, his expression hard with grief. Jake hurried to his father and took one of his hands. The pain made his face suddenly childlike. It looked odd on top of the man's body. Sam was right behind Billy, pushing his chair through the door. His normal composure was absent from his agonized face.
"I'm so sorry," I whispered.
Billy nodded.
"It's gonna be hard all around."
"Where's Charlie?"
"Your dad is still at the hospital with Sue. There are a lot of arrangements to be made."
I swallowed hard.
"I'd better get back there,"
Sam mumbled, and he ducked hastily out the door. Billy pulled his hand away from Jacob, and then he rolled himself through the kitchen toward his room. Jake stared after him for a minute, then came to sit on the floor beside me again. He put his face in his hands. I rubbed his shoulder, wishing I could think of anything to say. After a long moment, Jacob caught my hand and held it to his face.
"How are you feeling? Are you okay? I probably should have taken you to a doctor or something," he sighed.
"Don't worry about me," I croaked. He twisted his head to look at me. His eyes were rimmed in red.
"You don't look so good."
"I don't feel so good either, I guess."
"I'll go get your truck and then take you home. You probably ought to be there when Charlie gets back."
"Right." I lay listlessly on the sofa while I waited for him. Billy was silent in the other room. I felt like a peeping Tom, peering through the cracks at a private sorrow that wasn't mine. It didn't take Jake long. The roar of my truck's engine broke the silence before I expected it. He helped me up from the couch without speaking, keeping his arm around my shoulder when the cold air outside made me shiver. He took the driver's seat without asking, and then pulled me next to his side to keep his arm tight around me. I leaned my head against his chest.
"How will you get home?" I asked.
"I'm not going home. We still haven't caught the bloodsucker, remember?"
My next shudder had nothing to do with cold. It was a quiet ride after that. The cold air had woken me up. My mind was alert, and it was working very hard and very fast. What if? What was the right thing to do? I couldn't imagine my life without Jacob now. I cringed away from the idea of even trying to imagine that. Somehow, he'd become essential to my survival. But to leave things the way they were, was that cruel, as Mike had accused? I remembered wishing that Jacob were my brother. I realized now that all I really wanted was a claim on him. It didn't feel brotherly when he held me like this. It just felt nice, warm and comforting and familiar, safe. Jacob was a safe harbor. I could stake a claim. I had that much within my power. I'd have to tell him everything, I knew that. It was the only way to be fair. I'd have to explain it right, so that he'd know I wasn't settling, that he was much too good for me. He already knew I was broken. That part wouldn't surprise him, but he'd need to know the extent of it. I'd even have to admit that I was crazy, explain about the voices I heard. He'd need to know everything before he made a decision. But even as I recognized that necessity, I knew he would take me in spite of it all. He wouldn't even pause to think it through. I would have to commit to this. Commit as much of me as there was left. Every every one of the broken pieces. It was the only way to be fair to him. Would I? Could I? Would it be so wrong to try to make Jacob happy? Even if the love I felt for him was no more than a weak echo of what I was capable of, even if my heart was far away, wandering and grieving after my fickle Romeo, would it be so very wrong? Jacob stopped the truck in front of my dark house, cutting the engine so it was suddenly silent. Like so many other times, he seemed to be in tune with my thoughts now. He threw his other arm around me, crushing me against his chest, binding me to him. Again, this felt nice, almost like being a whole person again. I thought he would be thinking of Harry, but then he spoke and his tone was apologetic. "Sorry. I know you don't feel exactly the way I do, Bells. I swear I don't mind. I'm just so glad you're okay that I could sing, and that's something no one wants to hear." He laughed his throaty laugh in my ear. My breathing kicked up a notch, sanding the walls of my throat. Wouldn't Edward, indifferent as he might be, want me to be as happy as was possible under the circumstances? Wouldn't enough friendly emotion linger for him to want that much for me? I thought he would. He wouldn't begrudge me this, giving just a small bit of the love he didn't want to my friend Jacob. After all, it wasn't the same love at all. Jake pressed his warm cheek against the top of my hair. If I turned my face to the side, if I pressed my lips against his bare shoulder, I knew without any doubt exactly what would follow. It would be very easy. There would be no need for explanations tonight. But could I do it? Could I betray my absent heart to save my pathetic life? Butterflies assaulted my stomach as I thought about turning my head. And then, as clearly as if I were in immediate danger, Edward's velvet voice whispered in my ear. "Be happy," he told me. I froze. Jacob felt me stiffen and released me automatically, reaching for the door. "Wait," I wanted to say. "Just a minute." But I was still locked in place, listening to the echo of Edward's voice in my head. Storm-cooled air blew through the cab of the truck. "Oh!" The breath whooshed out of Jacob like someone had punched him in the gut. "Holy crap!" He slammed the door and twisted the keys in the ignition in the same moment. His hands were shaking so hard, I didn't know how he managed it. "What's wrong?" He revved the engine too fast. It sputtered and faltered. "Vampire," he spit out. The blood rushed from my head and left me dizzy. "How do you know?" "Because I can smell it. Damn it." Jacob's eyes were wild, raking the dark street. He barely seemed aware of the tremors that were rolling through his body. "Phase or get her out of here," he hissed at himself. He looked down at me for a split second, taking in my horror-struck eyes and white face. And then he was scanning the street again. "Right. Get you out." The engine caught with a roar. The tires squealed as he spun the truck around, turning toward our only escape. The headlights washed across the pavement, lit the front line of the black forest, and finally glinted off a car parked across the street from my house. "Stop!" I gasped. It was a black car, a car I knew. I might be the furthest thing from an autophile, but I could tell you everything about that particular car. It was a Mercedes S55 AMG. I knew the horsepower and the color of the interior. I knew the feel of the powerful engine purring through the frame. I knew the rich smell of the leather seats and the way the extra dark tint made noon look like dusk through those windows. It was Carlisle's car. "Stop!" I cried again, louder this time, because Jacob was gunning the truck down the street. "What?" "It's not Victoria. Stop! Stop! I want to go back!" He stomped on the brake so hard, I had to catch myself against the dashboard. "What?" he asked again, aghast. He stared at me with horror in his eyes. "It's Carlisle's car. It's the Cullens. I know it."
He watched dawn break across my face, and a violent tremor rocked his frame.
Hey, calm down, Jake. It's okay. No danger, see? Relax.
Yeah, calm, he panted, putting his head down and closing his eyes. While he concentrated on not exploding into a wolf, I stared out the back window at the black car. It was just Carlisle, I told myself. Don't expect anything more. Maybe Esme. Stop right there, I told myself. Just Carlisle. That was plenty. More than I'd ever hope to have again.
There's a vampire in your house, Jacob hissed. And you want to go back?
I glanced at him, ripping my unwilling eyes off the Mercedes, terrified that it would disappear the second I looked away.
Of course, I said,
my voice blank with surprise at his question. Of course I wanted to go back. Jacob's face hardened while I stared at him, congealing into the bitter mask that I thought was gone for good. Just before he had the mask in place, I caught the spasm of betrayal that flashed in his eyes. His hands were still shaking. He looked 10 years older than me. He took a deep breath.
You're sure it's not a trick? He asked in a slow, heavy voice.
It's not a trick. It's Carlisle. Take me back. A shudder rippled through his wide shoulders, but his eyes were flat and emotionless.
No.
Jake, it's okay.
No. Take yourself back, Bella.
His voice was a slap. I flinched as the sound of it struck me. His jaw clenched and unclenched.
Look, Bella, he said in the same hard voice. I can't go back. Treaty or no treaty, that's my enemy in there.
It's not like that.
I have to tell Sam right away. This changes things. We can't be caught on their territory.
Jake, it's not a war.
He didn't listen. He put the truck in neutral and jumped out the door, leaving it running.
Bye, Bella, he called back over his shoulder. I really hope you don't die.
He sprinted into the darkness, shaking so hard that his shape seemed blurred. He disappeared before I could open my mouth to call him back.
Remorse pinned me against the seat for one long second. What had I just done to Jacob? But remorse couldn't hold me very long. I slid across the seat and put the truck back in drive. My hands were shaking almost as hard as Jake's had been, and this took a minute of concentration. Then I carefully turned the truck around and drove it back to my house. It was very dark when I turned off the headlights. Charlie had left in such a hurry that he'd forgotten to leave the porch lamp on. I felt a pang of doubt, staring at the house deep in shadow. What if it was a trick? I looked back at the black car, almost invisible in the night. No, I knew that car. Still, my hands were shaking even worse than before as I reached for the key above the door. When I grabbed the doorknob to unlock it, it twisted easily under my hand. I let the door fall open. The hallway was black. I wanted to call out a greeting, but my throat was too dry. I couldn't quite seem to catch my breath. I took a step inside and fumbled for the light switch. It was so black, like the black water. Where was that switch? Just like the black water, with the orange flame flickering and possibly on top of it. Flame that couldn't be a fire. But what then? My fingers traced the wall, still searching, still shaking. Suddenly, something Jacob had told me this afternoon echoed in my head. Finally sinking in. She took off into the water, he'd said. The bloodsuckers have the advantage there. That's why I raced home. I was afraid she was going to double back swimming. My hand froze in its searching. My whole body froze into place as I realized why I recognized the strange orange color on the water. Victoria's hair, blowing wild in the wind, the color of fire. She'd been right there in the harbor with me and Jacob. If Sam hadn't been there, if it had been just the two of us, I couldn't breathe or move. The light flicked on.
though my frozen hand had still not found the switch. I blinked into the sudden light and saw that someone was there, waiting for me. Chapter 17, Visitor. Unnaturally still and white, with her large black eyes intent on my face, my visitor waited perfectly motionless in the center of the hall, beautiful beyond imagining. My knees trembled for a second and I nearly fell. Then I hurled myself at her. "Alice! Oh, Alice!" I cried as I slammed into her. I'd forgotten how hard she was. It was like running headlong into a wall of cement. "Bella?" There was a strange mingling of relief and confusion in her voice. I locked my arms around her, gasping to inhale as much of the scent of her skin as possible. It wasn't like anything else. Not floral or spice, citrus or musk. No perfume in the world could compare. My memory hadn't done it justice. I didn't notice when the gasping turned into something else. I only realized I was sobbing when Alice dragged me to the living room couch and pulled me into her lap. It was like curling up into a cool stone, but a stone that was contoured comfortingly to the shape of my body. She rubbed my back in a gentle rhythm, waiting for me to get control of myself. "I'm sorry," I blubbered. "I'm just so happy to see you."
"It's okay, Bella. Everything's okay."
"Yes," I bawled. And for once, it seemed that way. Alice sighed. "I'd forgotten how exuberant you are," she said, and her tone was disapproving. I looked up at her through my streaming eyes. Alice's neck was tight, straining away from me, her lips pressed together firmly. Her eyes were black as pitch.
"Oh,"
I puffed as I realized the problem. She was thirsty, and I smelled appetizing. It had been a while since I'd had to think about that kind of thing.
"Sorry." "It's my own fault. It's been too long since I hunted. I shouldn't let myself get so thirsty, but I was in a hurry today."
The look she directed at me then was a glare.
"Speaking of which, would you like to explain to me how you're alive?"
That brought me up short and stopped the sobs. I realized what must have happened immediately and why Alice was here. I swallowed loudly.
"You saw me fall."
"No," she disagreed, her eyes narrowing.
"I saw you jump."
I pursed my lips as I tried to think of an explanation that wouldn't sound nuts. Alice shook her head.
"I told him this would happen, but he didn't believe me." "Bella promised."
Her voice imitated his so perfectly that I froze in shock while the pain ripped through my torso.
"Don't be looking for her future either," she continued to quote him. "We've done enough damage."
"But just because I'm not looking doesn't mean I don't see," she went on.
"I wasn't keeping tabs on you, I swear, Bella. It's just that I'm already attuned to you. When I saw you jumping, I didn't think. I just got on a plane. I knew I would be too late, but I couldn't do nothing. And then I get here, thinking maybe I could help Charlie somehow, and you drive up."
She shook her head, this time in confusion. Her voice was strained.
"I saw you go into the water, and I waited and waited for you to come up. But you didn't. What happened? And how could you do that to Charlie? Did you stop to think what this would do to him? And my brother? Do you have any idea what Edward..."
I cut her off then, as soon as she said his name. I let her go on.